Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Melissa in the Morning right now on WICC 600.
Twice in 1 week, we have Senator Tony Wong back this morning, but we're going to be chatting about something that Senate Republicans brought forward yesterday. Actually, Senate Republican colleagues to Senator Tony Wong, they all presented a package of legislative proposals to address the state's mental health care crisis and give some more support to kids and their families and even the mental health workforce. And we're going to dive into really what this proposal is tackling. Good morning, Tony. Thank you so much for coming back on.
Good morning, Melissa. I'm so passionate about this issue. When you look at the startling numbers, right? In Connecticut, nearly 27% of all adults reported symptoms of anxiety and depressive disorder. And even more profoundly in our children, the data is compelling. And in December 2021, the U.S. Surgeon General did a study that showed 25% of our youth are experiencing some form of depression, and nearly 20% are facing challenges related to anxiety. These statistics are double what pre-pandemic just 2 years ago. It's shocking, and you can see it. You hear these heartbreaking stories, and it just really impacts me.
Mm-hmm. No, and for anyone who doesn't know, yesterday on the show, I did a huge breakdown of the man who played Charlie Brown, Peter Robbins, and his whole story and how, you know, he portrayed for such a long time a character who was depressed and was, I would say somebody who did struggle with mental health. And although we love Charlie Brown, the man behind Charlie Brown really struggled with mental health and of course, some other issues. But mental health was at the top of the list for Peter Robbins. And this was something that Senator Wong was like, wait a minute, this is crazy, because we're going to talk about this today in Hartford. And so let's talk about what you guys presented to the public yesterday. In looking at this, there are a lot of things you want to tackle, like access to mental health care. For example, I was reading, I think you guys want to make telehealth permanent. I don't know why that's not already an option. Again, I feel like there were some good things that came out of COVID, one of which was doing doctor's appointments or visits over a Zoom call. Talk about some of the big things that you guys want in the right now, really. It doesn't have to be something we wait for a year or two or for federal funding. To me, I think there are things we could do right now to tackle this problem.
Without a doubt, telehealth was something that we codified as a legislative body the last couple of years, and addressing obviously COVID's impact. But you know, as the ranking member in public health and in insurance, these are two major components of why we really haven't really codified it even further, is the fact that you've got an issue of making sure that the clinical treatment are up to standards, and that we are providing quality healthcare assessments and interaction through the telehealth that sometimes gets missed in an interpersonal dynamic. But telehealth is absolutely important. And the other critical factor, unfortunately, is insurance reimbursement. So for me, being on both committees, that is one that we're going to really tackle. And I'll say this, it's a Democrat and Republican priority. So, I mean, we wanted to take the lead on this for me as a ranking on both of those areas. But I truly believe in a positive mode that this is one where we all agree. And I'm grateful that, you know, in this divisive time, that we can agree that mental health is a priority. But telehealth is something that we want to fine-tune and make sure that the standard of care is there and the reimbursements are there for the people seeking those services and the providers.
And another thing that you wanted to tackle, Senator Wong, was supporting mental health workforce members a lot better with things like a tuition reimbursement program. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, right? We talk about the healthcare providers and mental health providers providing support. Who's there for them? And what we found in our studies and analysis is they are woefully not able to get some of the care. For example, in our Husky program, a unlicensed social worker does not get insurance coverage, and qualify for insurance coverage. So we're going to look at some of that loophole. But the other important component is we don't have enough trained professionals in that arena. And so we looked at tuition reimbursements. Is there going to be a cost to that? Absolutely. But it is worth every penny for us to get proper and an effective and a proper demand supply of medical professionals. There's just not enough of them across the whole spectrum. So we want to focus on taking care of that. And you know, I think the other critical part was youth. Youth mental health was critical to me. And you know, what's shocking is, yes, you did touch me yesterday when you talked about the character who voiced Charlie Brown. There was a sadness, right? And what came out of that U.S. Surgeon report additionally was that emergency room visits in 2021 showed a 51% increase in visits connected to attempted suicides for adolescent women. That was a shocking number to me.
I know that, like, the attorney general, he's in constant contact, it seems like, with TikTok and how, you know, TikTok has really not done a very good job of tracking some of these challenges online that have impacted our kids, their schools, things like that. So what do you exactly mean by a social media study?
We've never had a targeted study. So we were proposing to work with UConn to create a study with two schools, comparable size, makeup, and demographics, and to be able to have one that has the phones and the smartphones and the social media services, and then we would have the other school without it, and to be able to function and compare and contrast, to really see the contrast with or without. You know, how many times have we sometimes forgotten our phone? And I remember going on family vacations where the phone gets put away for a whole week. The first couple of hours were anxiety and thinking we can live without it. This was a study to be able to see what would be the impact of social media or the lack of, and being able to compare apples to apples.
Interesting. I love that. I love that idea. And then, you know, I have to be honest, as a mom, I love that you guys have also gotten away from, you know, just COVID and what we've gotten out of the pandemic, because I think this area, not just in Connecticut, but across the country, needs to be better. Prioritizing maternal mental health via postpartum screening and support. And for anyone who doesn't know exactly what that means, after somebody has a baby, sometimes the postpartum is awful. And I know this firsthand because I dealt with it. Now, I felt very lucky because I had a very supportive family and I'm very religious. And I moved back home, essentially. I mean, the reason I came back to Connecticut was because my postpartum was so bad. That is the honest truth. It took me a while to admit that. But, you know, it didn't feel like there were as many services that were just readily available or that insurance would cover to talk about the fact that postpartum depression is a real thing. And a lot of mothers go through it and you don't even expect it. Like, I was over the moon that I was having a baby, and for some reason it was such a traumatic experience having him that for the first 3 months after having Chase I struggled tremendously. And again, I'm lucky because I had the support system, but a lot of people don't have that, and then on top of it they can't afford to have screenings or to have people to talk to about postpartum depression and their mental health. So I love that you guys have prioritized that. So could you just talk about that a little bit?
Melissa, absolutely. Parenting is one of the greatest joys anyone could have, but it also comes with incredible challenges. When we propose this, our thought is not the second day after you have the baby where everybody is all around you and everybody's joyous, but it is in the weeks and the days afterwards when you are sometimes feeling overwhelmed with all the new challenges of parenting, lack of sleep, tremendous worry and pressure. And one we addressed was removing the social stigma, to be able to provide that kind of support, to let people know that it exists, instead of the old ways of, you know, this will pass and you're going to deal with it. Look, we need to remove the social stigma of mental health as a whole. A second area that we looked at was aware that our medical professionals need to do a wellness assessment, that upon release. It's not just checking on the baby and your physical health, but to ask you and share with you some of the challenges and anxieties that you have. It's not just buying the doctor's spot book and thinking all the solutions are in textbooks. The other area is when you go for your pediatrician care and wellness care for your baby, that perhaps our medical professionals, even in the pediatric arena, takes a second and say, Mom, Dad, how are you feeling? And to be able to do a comprehensive kind of assessment. But ultimately, it is an awareness and a consciousness to say mental health is equally as important as physical health.
Mm-hmm. I do absolutely agree with that. And Senator Tony Wong, we have run out of time, but I'm curious, are these going to be topics that are brought up during like the legislative session? Do you think these are things that could be discussed beforehand? What are your thoughts?
Well, we are in discussions right now. It is in the Public Health Committee, some of the things that we bounced around. Ultimately, as I said in the beginning of the show, I genuinely believe we are at a crisis, but at the same time, I genuinely believe that this is not a partisan issue, and if we can get it through the finish line, it's going to always be for the better, and ultimately that's what we're there to do, and I think the key is recognizing that mental health is equally as important as physical health. And I'll leave with one extra thing. You're going to talk about fentanyl. One of the biggest challenges that we don't always address is people struggling with mental health utilize substances to compensate, leading to a concern in regards to the addiction and substance abuse that we also see increasing in our society. I do believe there's a genuine correlation. So it is important for us to tackle this and resolve it and move forward.
I agree with you. Well, Senator Wong, I appreciate the thoughtfulness behind this. I do hope that we see at least some, if not all, of these things move forward, because as you mentioned, mental health is continuing to be a huge crisis here and across the country, and I'm glad that we're addressing it. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, Melissa. Thank you for being such an advocate in that arena as well.
And now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
Weeks ago, it came to our attention that a Danbury prison was not treating their inmates as well as they could when it came to COVID, and just the conditions there were not great. There were protests actually right outside the prison. I believe it was earlier this month or last month, and it turns out Senator Blumenthal and Senator Chris Murphy went to Danbury yesterday to go and take a prison tour. What happened, Senator Blumenthal? Good morning.
Good morning to you, Melissa. Thanks for having me, as always. What happened was, first, we were denied admission to a number of areas that were on the itinerary that was agreed to before we arrived. For example, the women's camp, certain other areas where the inmates are. And the reason that we wanted to see those areas was that inmates reportedly were not separated if they were infected as quickly as they should have been. They weren't quarantined or isolated as rapidly as was required in the public health protocols. But also we were concerned about staffing levels, because the quarantine and isolation conditions created the need for more assignments, more hours in different places for the correctional officers. And they are understaffed. That is a danger to themselves and possibly to inmates. And we wanted to see for ourselves firsthand what the conditions were.
Yeah, my understanding is it's so understaffed that they've used people like kitchen workers and janitors to actually fill in or stand in for some of those positions. Were you able to confirm that?
That is indeed correct. They have been reassigning correctional officers or others employed there to different duties simply because they need more people in the cell box. And we met a number of people who have been reassigned in that way. The kitchen services, where we also visited, are essentially shut down for eating there. Inmates may pick up their food and go back to their cells, so there may be less need for correctional officers in the eating area, the chow area, as they refer to it. But in fact, there are additional pressures on those correctional officers when they're reassigned. And overall, the point is that the number of correctional officers has declined at a time when they are in need of more, not less.
Mm-hmm. Senator Blumenthal is here this morning. He and Senator Chris Murphy went to a Danbury prison yesterday where you were denied access from several sections of that tour. Why, Senator Blumenthal? I mean, were you given the heads up, or was it when you first showed up, they were like, sorry, you can't see this, you can't talk to these people? Like, how did that work? Were you in the understanding that you'd be able to see the facility as much as you wanted, or what happened?
We showed up and they said, actually the warden directly said that we could not see certain areas, much to our surprise. We went into the main building from the snow and cold, and then a number of us walked over to the women's facility where we were completely denied any entrance. Obviously, we would have gone under the protocols established and whatever reasonable limits were in place. But in fact, we learned about these restrictions that we would regard entirely when we arrived.
What was the reason they blocked you?
Unclear. The warden said that she wanted to be particularly careful in a time of COVID about possible infection at the facility, implying that perhaps we would infect some of the inmates. But essentially, the decision seemingly was not hers. It must have come from higher up. And I will say the Bureau of Prisons is going to have new leadership. The present director is leaving, and we are going to be asking tough questions. I'm a member of the Judiciary Committee of the next nominee. But also, in the meantime, I'm going to be talking to my Judiciary Committee colleagues, because we have oversight over the Bureau of Prisons. We are responsible for scrutinizing their practices. And I've long complained, as you know from our conversation, about the failure to sufficiently protect inmates and to provide sufficient staff. And we've written a number of times, Senator Murphy, myself, Congresswoman Hayes, demanding answers. So far, we've received no response to our latest letter earlier this month.
So is there reason to believe, Senator Blumenthal, that they're hiding something, that the conditions really are very bad?
I would prefer to think that there may be some bureaucratic snafu here, but clearly somebody didn't want us to see the inside of those facilities where we were promised we would have access. And we're hoping to go back and that they will give us that access.
Senator Blumenthal, we appreciate your efforts and for telling us what happened in Danbury yesterday. Thank you so much. And as soon as you go back and have an update, we'd love to hear about it.
Great. Thanks for having me, as always. Take care.
That's Senator Blumenthal here on WICC.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoo Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
What the little brain frog wonder? What the little brain frog? What the little brain frog wonder? And his eyes went pop, pop.
I don't know if you guys ever grew up with Sillyville. Us 90s kids, we actually had the VHS Sillyville. And probably my favorite part of it is when they do the duet with the three little frogs. And that's where the little green frog song came from. And immediately, that's all I thought of when I heard about today's Zoom Minute topic, which is about Frog Watch. It's back. I'm very excited. Greg Dancho is here with all the details. Good morning, Greg. What's going on?
That was a lot of fun, Melissa. But yeah, hold on a second. Let's Frog Watch actually is more listening than watching. So let's give it 2 seconds here. So what did we just hear? When we heard spring peepers. That
yeah,
was
like
my
shipping.
Favorite sound. The favorite sound that I have comes as the weather gets warmer. It's coming up sooner than later. You know, we're really almost turned the corner, even though this big storm's coming in. So we're getting prepared, and we're getting prepared for the frogs to start getting out of hibernation. Actually, wood frogs will be one of the first frogs that come out. They'll be out as the ice is still on the pond.
Oh, wow.
Really, they'll still be freezing cold temperatures. The ice will be on the ponds. You'll go out there and you'll hear these clicking that almost sounds like little woodmen, carpenters tapping on wood. And that's why they're called wood frogs. And you'll hear those are the first frogs that'll be coming out in the spring. And so that's something we'll be listening for. So there are 11 species of frogs and toads in Connecticut. A lot of people don't even realize there's that many here. We have toads, we have tree frogs, we have spadefoot toads, and we have true frogs. We have American toad, Fowler's toad, gray tree frog, spring peeper, eastern spadefoot toad, bullfrog, green frog, pickerel frog, Atlantic coast leopard frog, northern leopard frog, and wood frogs.
Wow.
So it's kind of cool to have that many species of frogs in Connecticut. So why is frog watch important? And like I said, more like frog listen, is because this is a citizen science program that we work with. The Maritime Aquarium and the Yale's Peabody Museum is a partnership between the three organizations because we feel this is vitally important. It's also a nationwide program with AZA, the Association of Zoos Aquariums that we're members of, that is trying to collect data on our frog populations. Frogs are basically the canary in the coal mine. And I don't know if everybody knows that story, the canary in the coal mine. People, this old story was the miners would go down into the mines and have a little caged canary with them. And that canary would be more susceptible to the gas that would be in the mines than the miners would be before they realize it. So they always keep a look at the bird to see how it's doing. And if the bird didn't look so well, they get out of the mine. So we consider frogs that canary in the coal mine. We watch them to see how their populations are doing. If they're doing well, then really means our environment's doing well because frogs take a lot of their health through their skin. So with acid rain or climate change or pollution, frogs will be one of the first animals that will show those signs that things are getting bad. So this is really why this program is really, really good to do. It's also really great because it's a citizen science program. And what do we mean by citizen science? Citizen science is that we are inviting – it's not just us doing it. It's not the zoo
professionals. It's the general public who can get
it. It's the general public.
Yeah.
It's your family. It's you. You can take this course and learn to identify these frog sounds. And then you're asked to go find a spot that you know frogs are out there, right? And you go to the same spot. You're not traveling all over the state of Connecticut listening for frogs. You're going to pick one spot, and you're going to go there, and you're going to identify the frogs that you hear, and you're going to go there about 15 minutes and spend about 15 minutes, maybe once or twice a week, just listening and then logging down what you hear. And this course will tell you how you can determine how many, like that little sound bite they just gave. That's actually spring peepers in Roosevelt Forest in Stratford. That I go and I tape down in there. And how many frogs am I listening to? Well, take a good guess. You're probably listening to about maybe 30, 40 frogs.
Wow.
So you're going to make a determination how many frogs you're listening to, what species of frogs and toads you're listening to, because toads have that specific trill. They're really cool. Again, I love this, when frogs, the toads are calling mating calls. It's just a really cool trill, like a little bird call. And that is something you'll listen to at half an hour after sunset, and you just sit there and listen to frogs. You take your children, you take your family, and you listen to it. You log it down, and then you're helping collect data on a nationwide basis, which is again, you're helping with science. You're helping get data collected to show how our health of our plants doing, and also how the health of our frogs are doing. Frogs are – I have a special place in my heart. I love frogs. I think they're the coolest thing on the planet.
They are very cool. And what I love about this program too, Greg, is I think some people will say, oh, well, I don't live near a wetland, so I can't be included. That's not true. It doesn't matter where you live. You just have to live here in Connecticut if you want to be part of the program here in Connecticut. And it only requires one training session. And there's one coming up in February. There are two in March. I just think this is such a great idea. Like you said, you can get the kids involved. It's something very relaxing in a very stressful time. Where can people go if they want to register for this? Do you know where that is?
Go on our website. Again, on our website, there are, again, like you just mentioned, there is going to be a first course on February 24th. then on March 9th, and then on March 15th. And they're going to be at different locations. They're going to be at the aquarium, at the zoo, and Peabody Museum. So best is to go onto the website, look up Frog Watch on our website, beardsleyzoo.org, and you'll see where the locations are and the times are, and just register there. And again, these will be presented live online. So again, we're not looking, we're not doing this, we're doing this as a Zoom program. So you're not even have to come to the, I mean, I've just said, you know, let me just rewind. You're not going to have to come to the zoo to do these things. You're going to do this online with us.
That's great.
Have the courses,
yeah, so
they're going to be
easy.
Done online. So you can do it in your house. You learn on it. You take a quick quiz on it. They pass, and then you're off as a citizen science.
That
so
is
again,
so cool.
Easy peasy. Do it at home. You know, get the take one of the three lessons that the programs that are going to be going on, and register there. And it's a lot of fun. I've done it with my kids. I took my kids, and I've taken my grandkids now out to Roosevelt Forest in Stratford, especially after the first rains in March, when it's a little bit warm, around 50 degrees, and it's a light rain. You go there at dusk, and you'll see that the migration of the amphibians starts.
Where the
wood frogs are migrating, the peepers are calling, and the salamanders are moving. So to me, it's a magical time.
Yeah,
I'm really looking forward to it this year.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. I think everybody after this deep freeze is looking forward to it. It's a great sign that we're moving forward and away from winter a little bit. Greg, this will be really cool. I love that. So again, if you want to check out some of the details, head over to the Beardsley Zoo website and you'll find some more details there. Thanks, Greg. Very exciting.
Thank you. Okay, yeah, it was very exciting. And we have Chili. Chili is our giant
they pick Chili.
Baby.
All
pick
right. Chili the baby, you know, anteater. I love it. Oh, Chili.
I think everybody loves Chili.
Oh, you know what? Honestly, on these cold days, there's nothing better than Chili. Thank you so much, Greg. We'll chat next
Take
week.
Care.
That's Greg Dantro of the Beardsley Zoo here on WICC.